This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
Welcome back to our continuing coverage. I'm Tony Bruschi, and we're on segment number three in the trial of Alex Murdaugh. Let's head to the courtroom.
Mr. Griffin, you wanted to put something on the record?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. During cross-examination of Mr. Murdaugh, he had testified that in relation to the financial crimes, that he had tried to meet with the Attorney General's office, and that on multiple occasions, and that he had, from the get-go, had always been willing to sit down with them. He was specifically talking about the financial investigation and the charges which he received as a result of those investigations. Following up to that questioning, that answer, Mr. Waters then went to Mr. Murdaugh's testimony and the information he provided about being down at the kennel, and he said you had never provided that information to law enforcement and other people until today or yesterday. And Your Honor, that is a direct violation of Doyle v. Ohio, where the Supreme Court said that cross-examining the defendant about his failure to have told an exculpatory story after receiving Miranda warnings at the time of his arrest is a due process violation. The court goes on to say the defendant's post-arrest silence cannot be used against him. Violates due process. And that's exactly what happened on cross-examination. So I want to make clear the grounds for objection. Also would like to move to strike the question, strike the answer, and get a curative jury instruction that they are not to consider any failure of the defendant to come forward with exculpatory information after his arrest relating to the murder charges. Thank you.
Mr. Waters.
Yes, sir, Your Honor. Clearly, this defendant has given statements on multiple occasions, and that operates as a waiver under Doyle. Additionally, my question was not so limited, as Mr. Griffin says, and it was, in fact, the defendant who made a point of saying that he had repeatedly tried to talk and put that in issue, at which point this was directly responsive to what he brought up. Additionally, this was also all that was discussed were public statements of his counsel, who was an agent on his behalf and attributable to him. So there's no Doyle violation here. If Mr. Murdaugh had claimed his right to silence from the beginning and had kept that throughout, then the state would be precluded from commenting on the exercise of his right to remain silent. But one thing we know about Mr. Murdaugh is he has not remained silent at any point during this process, and he's the one that brought up this false claim that he had been begging to tell the Kennel story when, in fact, he did not do so till yesterday.
Doyle primarily addresses the issue of post-arrest silence. If an accused is silent following an arrest, then it's improper to comment on the post-arrest silence. It does not allow an accused or a person who's suspected to give contradictory information or to voluntarily give a statement or to voluntarily give a misstatement, as has been acknowledged here. I do not find any Doyle violation, and the record is protected. I certainly understand the defense raising any and all possible issues, and they can be raised, and you've done it here. The record is protected, but all motions are denied. Let's bring the jury.
Thank you. jury is present, sir.
Very good. You may proceed.
May it please the court, Your Honor.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Murdoch, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Get that mic up a little bit, please.
Excuse me.
Thank you.
There we go.
When we left off, we were talking about at what point during that interview in the car with Dave Owen that you decided to start lying about the murders of your wife and son. I'm going to pick up this video real quick. Not going to play the whole thing, but we'll start from 2 minutes and 9 seconds.
We'll just start without taking time.
Like when I came back here, mm-hmm. I pulled up and I could see him, and I knew something was bad. I ran out. I knew it was really bad. And my boy over there, I could see it was. And I could see his brain on his. And I ran over to Maggie. Actually, I think I tried to turn Paul over first. I tried to turn him over, and I don't know, I figured it out. His cell phone popped out of his pocket. I started to try to do something with it, thinking maybe, but then I put it back down really quickly. Then I went to my wife, and I could see. Mm-hmm.
Did you touch Maggie at all?
I did. I touched them both.
Okay.
I tried to do it as limited as possible, mm-hmm. but I tried to take their pulse on both of them. Mm-hmm. And, I called 911 pretty much right away, and she was very good. I talked to her. I told her I was going to get off the phone to call some family members. I did that.
What family members did you call?
I called my brother Randy, and I called my brother John. And I tried to call a little boy, a real good friend that's right around the corner from here, but I didn't get him.
What all was around Paul when you walked up?
Blood.
Anything else?
I mean, there was some body mm-hmm. things, yes, sir.
I mean, like any other evidence? I know you said the phone fell out of the pocket. But did you see anything else that didn't belong or shouldn't belong or that wasn't part of Paul?
No, sir. No, sir.
How about Maggie?
No, sir.
You didn't see anything around them? What made you come out here tonight?
I went to... My mom's a late-stage Alzheimer's patient. My dad's in the hospital. My mom gets anxious when she does. I went to check on them and Maggie. Maggie's a dog lover. Okay. She fools with the dogs. And I knew she'd gone to the kennel. I was at the house.
Just to be clear, you say you hadn't made the conscious decision to start lying about your wife and son's murder right there, correct?
I don't believe so.
Okay. Let's continue on.
Mr. Waters, I can't tell you exactly when that decision occurred.
Okay. You can't describe to the jury the moment you decided to lie about your wife and son's murder.
I can't tell you exactly when that moment occurred.
I left the house and went.
But you did say earlier that when David Owen asked you about your relationships, that was a trigger point, correct?
Well, that was certainly one of the things that contributed or made me paranoid.
Okay.
Now, you know, there were already things that had gone on that occurred, as I said, that put me in that mindset.
Yeah.
But exactly when I decided to lie about that, I can't tell you. Mm-hmm.
So the things, again, you talked about, your dope paranoia, the fact they'd taken GSR, and you talked about the advice of your law partners and Sheriff Hill and Greg Alexander, and then you talked about your distrust of SLED somehow from this, the circumstances and demeanor of this interview right here, correct?
No, my distrust from SLED didn't arise from this interview. My distrust for SLED arose from a couple of things, and it's really several things. It arose from the way they had been involved in, SLED had been involved in the investigation into Paul's criminal charges, and they had been involved in, there was an issue that had gone on with some rumors about Buster and Paul. They had been involved in that where, you know, Buster nor Paul had anything to do with what I'm talking about, and SLED never said that, even though they told their lawyer that. They never say that. And there had been another incident where SLED had charged Greg Alexander, my friend in this case. They charged him. And in fact, I thought the agent that was involved in that was David Owen, but the charges against Greg Alexander were so, they were so wrong that my dad and I made a conscious decision, even though he was a career prosecutor, made a decision to go to the courthouse and sit with Greg Alexander while his trial went on, because
it was 10 years ago, right?
It was a while back, yeah. You know.
But you don't know if Dave Owen was at SLED 10 years ago.
No, I checked on that, because that night the officer who was involved in that case in bringing clearly manufactured charges against Greg Alexander.
So you're saying the night before you sat down for this interview, you were asking somebody about whether or not something about Greg Alexander 10 years ago in the wake of what had occurred?
Oh, no, I didn't ask anybody.
Okay, so that wasn't what you were discussing when you were sitting in this car.
No, I wasn't discussing that. I'm just telling you that I thought David Owen was the same agent that was involved in that case. Now, I learned later, because I checked on it, I learned later that it was a different David SLED agent. First name David with a different last name. I learned that later. I'm just saying that was all part of that process going on in my mind.
So you're saying that you're sitting here right now thinking that this Dave Owen and this circumstances and demeanor of this interview, you're thinking that guy had been involved in the prosecution or investigation of your friend 10 years ago?
I did.
Okay, so here's a new one you just mentioned to us, correct?
No, that's not a new one.
Okay.
That's part of...
I mean, the circumstances are new. I mean, no, that's fairly specific, don't you think?
Well, no, sir.
The story keeps evolving. Keep going.
You asked me about this, Mr. Owen. What I said is part of this whole... I mean, Mr. Waters, the whole part of this whole process involved my distrust for SLED. That was a big part of my distrust for SLED.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can all see it on your face in this interview, can't we?
I don't know.
All right. But you said what you just said a little bit ago, that wasn't the lie, that wasn't the conscious decision yet, so let's keep going.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying I don't believe that it was. I don't know exactly when I made the decision to lie about that.
All right.
All right?
Well, if you see it, let me know, okay? I want to go forward.
To my mom, for just a little while, tried to call her when I left, texted her, no response. When I got back to the house was obviously, nobody was in there. So I figured they're still up here fooling around. Paul was going to be getting set up to plant. Our sunflower seeds got sprayed and died, and he was refiguring to plant the sunflower seeds. So I came back up here, and drove up and saw and called.
Had Maggie and Paul been arguing over anything?
No.
What was their relationship like?
Wonderful.
Wonderful. How about yours and Maggie's?
Wonderful. I mean, I'm sure we had little things here and there, but we had a wonderful marriage, wonderful relationship.
And yours and Paul's relationship?
As good as it could be.
How old was Paul?
22.
Okay.
So that was the moment, right there, that line of questioning. Just asking some very general questions about your relationship. You mentioned that before, didn't you, Mr. Murdoch? Is that the moment right there? Is that the look on your face when you decide to lie about an important fact in your wife and son's murder?
I don't know. As I said, Mr. Waters, I don't know the exact point that I made that decision.
You specifically earlier mentioned that very exchange is somehow triggering you to lie about the last time you saw them alive.
No, I'm not saying that that's what made me lie. I'm saying this whole set of circumstances caused me to be in a state where I had paranoid thoughts.
Okay.
That normally, Mr. Waters, I could take a deep breath and make go away in a second or 2 seconds or 3 seconds at the most. And on this night, I wasn't able to do that. But all of those things that I mentioned, I believe, contributed to that.
Okay. Any more you want to add now, since you keep adding them?
I'd be glad to answer any question you have.
Well, I mean, I'm asking you. I mean, the factors have gone from yesterday to today, and now, even after lunch, we got some new ones. So anything else you want to add right now as to factors?
Mr. Waters, I don't believe that I've added any new factors. I believe that's what I said yesterday.
All right.
I've explained some of those factors because of your questions, but I don't believe I've added any factors.
Okay. All right, let me move this forward just a little bit.
Okay, so most of this was stuff from a couple of them, but not.
Yesterday in great detail about the boat case, which you brought up on the 911 call and to Daniel Green, and then, of course, in this first interview, correct?
I did mention the boat wreck.
All right, and you described that. Do you remember what you said in this interview about the boat wreck?
Not specifically.
About specifically the other people involved in the boat wreck? You don't remember specifically? Do you remember specifically? I guess you said no.
I remember talking about the boat wreck. And I
know
that I talked about the boat wreck.
All right. Well, I'm going to play it now from 1714.
Any direct threats between any of the people on the boat,
okay,
specifically, but I do think there's been a small amount of yip-yap between a couple of them, but not recently.
Okay.
What was the term you used for that? A small amount of yip-yap?
Yeah, and just to be clear, Mr. Waters, there was never, ever a point in time where I thought that the people that were involved in the boat wreck did this to Paul and Maggie.
Okay.
I've never thought that.
All right. I never thought that, but it's literally one of the first things that you said out of the 911 call.
No, that's not what I said. I never, ever, ever under any point in time believed that those kids that were riding in that boat or their parents
or their
families. I didn't believe that any of the families, the people that were involved in the boat wreck, had anything to do with hurting Maggie and Paul.
Okay.
But I can tell you that at that time, and as I sit here today, that I believe that boat wreck is the reason why Pawpaw and Maggie were killed.
Okay.
And I'm certain, so I believe
it was,
that.
It was random vigilantes, the 5-2 vigilantes, huh?
No, what I believe, Mr. Waters, is I believe that when Paul was charged criminally, there were so many leaks, half-truths, half-reports, half-statements, partial information, misrepresentations of Paul that ended up in the media all the time. And when I tell you the social media response that came from that was vile, the things that were said about what they would do to Papa, they were so over the top that nobody would believe anybody would get on social media and do that. But I believe then, and I believe today, that the wrong person saw and read that.
Okay.
Because I can tell you for a fact that the person or people who did what I saw on June the 7th, they hated Paul Murdoch. And they had anger in their heart. And that is the only reason that somebody could be mad at Pawpaw like that and hate him like that.
Gotcha. All right, so we've got now.
But that's why I did then believe it was the boat wreck, mm-hmm. and I believe now that the boat wreck had something to do with it.
All right, so we've got random vigilantes because of the boat wreck.
Now, I don't know that they're random vigilantes.
Well, you just said it wasn't the family or the kid or their kids or the family of the other kids in the boat, right?
But
you're saying it's somebody off of social media. And you don't have any evidence of that, do you?
You just believe
that. You're just telling that jury that as you try to explain the lie that you told for the first time yesterday. Isn't that right?
No, sir, that's not right.
It's not right. All right. Well, let me ask you a question then. So what you're telling this jury is that it's a random vigilante.
That's your
12-year-old, the 12-year-old 5-2 people. That just happened to know that Paul and Maggie were both at Moselle on June 7th, that knew that they would be at the kennels alone on June the 7th, that knew that you would not be there, but only between the times of 8:49 and 9:02, that they show up without a weapon, assuming that they're going to find weapons and ammunition there, that they commit this crime during that short time window, and then they travel the same exact route that you do around the same time to Alameda. That's what you're trying to tell this jury?
You got a lot of factors in there, Mr. Waters, all of which I do not agree with, but some of which I do.
All right. You testified earlier that after this happened, well, let me back up just real quick. When you were driving to and from Alameda, why were you in such a hurry? Why are you rolling 70, 80 miles an hour down that dark, beat up road?
I wasn't in such a hurry.
You weren't?
No, sir.
Show you what's been marked as States 573. See if you recognize this.
I do.
And tell the jury what that is.
It's Mike's car.
Right. What's it in front of?
The house at Moselle.
And what's between the house and the Mercedes?
The golf cart.
Is that where it was on June the 8th, to your recollection?
No, sir.
Where was it left?
I mean, it was near there, but that's not exactly where it was, no, sir.
Okay, where was it?
Where we would normally park, it would be a little bit closer to the shed. I mean, a little bit closer to the house, to the bushes.
Okay. Your Honor,
when was that photograph taken?
Well, do you recognize when it was taken?
No, I don't recognize. No,
you
sir.
Wouldn't dispute that it was around the time in the aftermath of the murders, would you?
Aftermath being when?
I'm asking you.
A day, a week, an hour?
I wasn't there, Mr. Murdoch. Do you recognize this?
I recognize the car, I recognize the house, and I recognize the golf cart. But that is not, that's not exactly how it would have been that night.
Can you describe to me then where it would be different?
Well, it would be more in line with... First things first is when we drove the golf cart, or when I drove it for sure, and I believe when the others drove it, you would come in and you would go across the little brick walkway that's in front of this. So if I would have come in and gone this way, or I would have come in and gone this way. This is not a place that any of my family would have normally parked it. And so what I'm assuming is this obviously is taken at daytime. Mm-hmm. And what I'm assuming is it was taken when Sled came to the earliest it was taken was when Sled came to the house the next day, which I believe the testimony is in the afternoon. And at this point in time, that golf cart, I would assume, would have been moved several times, but that's right. Not how it was.
Well, where did you leave the golf cart when you got out of it around 8:49?
In the manner in which I just talked about.
Okay. Well, help me out again so I understand. You would have come around this way or that way, but where was it? Where would it end up?
It would have been in this picture is facing to the right.
Oh, I got you.
The night that I drove it, I believe I parked it facing to the left.
I understand.
Would be customarily how I did it. And I believe I did it that way that night.
Okay. Well,
and that is how I would have gotten into it.
All right. That's a very specific memory. Thank you. All right. At this time, the state would offer State's 573 in evidence.
No objection. Admit it without objection.
Get out of the Alma very briefly.
And see, Mr. Waters, you can see in the picture now that you bring this up on screen. If you look to the right, you can see the actual steps. And just to the left of that would be where the little brick patio starts. So where I would normally park it, you would roll across those bricks, and the end of the golf cart would be just past those. And we all normally parked it that way because the way you charge this golf cart is if you see that back seat, that's sitting, you can see the edge. This is a three-seat golf cart, and you can see the back seat. And a lot of golf carts have the charger that sits on the floor or something. This golf cart has a charger that's plugged in and a part of the golf cart. So you flip that seat up, and it plugs in. And this and the outlets are right up there by the door.
Okay. Anything else you want to say about that?
I'm going to answer any questions you have, Mr. Waters.
Well, I appreciate all that information in great detail.
Judge, you
do
the comment.
Sustain.
All right.
It's just never parked that way by the family.
Have the computer back, please.
What's up?
All Mr. Murdoch, I'm going to put up the second interview. This would have been June the 10th. I'm not going to play the whole thing, but I do want to go through a couple of things with you, okay?
Anything you want to go through, Mr. Waters?
I apologize, got ahead of myself. I want to do one last thing on the first one. For the record, I'm going to start.
I forget the guy's name.
I'm going to start it at 23:55. This is the first interview.
Amy's been having trouble with her. She's been having trouble with her stomach and her tooth. I'm not positive. It was sort of a routine visit, and I can't remember. She told me the name of him, and I can't. I want to say Gordine.
Okay.
Is who I think she saw.
So was she back home around supper time, or 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock?
I don't think she got back quite that early. I think she got back a little bit later than that.
Okay. What did you do today? Were you at the office or?
No, I was home. I came home. Paul and I messed around. I was up at the house. I laid down, took a nap on the couch, probably, I don't know, 25, 30 minutes. I got up, I called Maggie, didn't get an answer, and I left to go to my mom's. She had said she might ride with me, but she normally doesn't when I go over there. And I think I texted her.
There, when you repeated the lie that you decided?
Was that the moment that I decided?
Was that the moment you decided to lie to mean old Dave Owen?
I don't know, as I told you, Mr. Waters, the exact moment that I decided to lie. But at that point in time.
But you did lie there, correct?
I did.
Okay.
And she's very good about answering the phone, so that was odd, or calling me back. So that was odd, but it wasn't that big a deal.
All right, I'm going to go to the second interview. It's been previously admitted. Let me ask you this before we start. You stated earlier during your direct testimony that after these crimes happened, you were around family. Family was around you. Your law partners are around you pretty much every minute after that, correct? Every waking minute. Didn't you say that yesterday?
Yes, they were for a long time.
All right. And this second interview was 3 days later, is that right?
That's correct.
And in no time with any of your close friends and law partners and family, do you confess the truth? Do you?
No, I did not.
Do you say, hey, man, I think I messed up. What should I do about this?
No, I didn't.
You're not telling that lie to anyone, are you? Until yesterday.
Excuse me?
You're not telling that lie to anyone until yesterday, are you?
Not telling what lie? Saying I tried to tell somebody that I was lying?
All right.
Well, hang up. So is that.
All right, I'm going to move this to approximately 2456.
Went to Dudley.
Correction, I'm at 1228.
Him, he doesn't like to go to doctors. Making him go get his blood pressure checked. His feet have swollen up recently.
Wow.
So, you know, that was a big, huge deal.
Okay.
You know, we hung around the house for a little while. I know that Maggie went to the kennels. I don't know exactly where Paul went, but he left the house too.
Okay. How did Maggie get down to the kennels?
I don't know exactly. But on normal occasions, she would drive a buggy, drive a four-wheeler, or very common for her to walk.
Okay. How about Paul?
Paul wasn't much of a walker, but he would use all of the others.
Okay.
But, it could be anyway, okay. You know? I don't know exactly. I wish I could help you with that.
So they left and went down to the kennels.
Well, Maggie went to go to the kennels.
Okay, Paul left.
And I'm assuming, you know, Paul left.
Okay.
Because of, you know,
gotcha.
What happened. I mean, I'm assuming Paul went to the kennels.
Okay. And what did you do once Maggie and Paul left?
I stayed in the house.
Okay.
And I was watching TV, looking at my phone, and I actually fell asleep on the couch.
Okay. And what time did you?
You know, I don't know exactly what time I woke up, but when y'all get my phone, you know, I think one of the first things I did when I got up was call Maggie because I was going to my mom's.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I texted her because I checked my phone. And what time did we say the text was, Jim? Like 9:06.
I didn't see it.
Yeah, I got it written down for the other night.
I showed you the other night,
yes,
didn't I?
Yes, sir. I got it.
So, you know, I texted her. So I called her just before that.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, she didn't answer at that point. And I left to go to my mom's.
Okay.
Y'all just have to look. I'm not sure if I called Paul.
Well, and that's why we're getting the phone so we can nail down the times and everything.
Pretty much all of that was lies, wasn't it?
The part about me not being at the kennel was a lie.
Well, also not knowing that Paul went down there, not being sure, that was a lie too, wasn't it? I mean, you're putting some detail on this thing, aren't you?
Not knowing when Paul left. Everything about me not going to the kennel was a lie.
And you're able to just do that just so easily and so convincingly and so naturally, don't you?
I mean, that's not for me to judge.
That's true.
It's an odd story.
get to where I'm going.
Right now.
So do y'all have any good clues?
So we're trying to put a rush on that to get an answer quick, and hoping that's going to tell us something.
By evidence, I mean, is it things you think are going to be helpful?
Well, I mean, like the shot shells out there, the casings, the DNA swabs that we took from the door handle to see if anybody touched the door handles, any other places that we think somebody may have touched while they were out there. You know, we're trying to collect DNA from that and analyze that, which at the conclusion of this, what I'm going to also ask is that we get a buccal swab, a DNA swab from you.
No problem.
Your DNA is going to be there, but we need to eliminate it once it's developed. So, you know,
we don't need that unknown when it actually is a family member.
No problem.
I mean, we have talked to close to 100 people trying to track people down, and we're still tracking people down. And that's why, you know, who Paul was with.
I want to tell you one thing while I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
Paul was really an incredibly intuitive little dude.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, he was like a little detective. And
he was like a little detective. Is that what you said?
That is what I said. And he was very intuitive, like I said.
And that was what Marion described as Maggie's term for how he was and keeping tabs on your pill usage. Wasn't that correct?
That was what Maggie said about him.
For some reason, you decided to bring that up in this interview, didn't you?
That was a trait of Paul's personality. I mean, I think anybody who knew him would tell you how intuitive he was.
I went through hours of videos.
All right. For the record, I'm at 4630.
I want to collect it.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Very much.
So,
Mr. Allen.
You don't have to call me Miss. You just call me Allen. Thank you for that.
When you and Paul got back in the house, Miss Maggie's there, and y'all eat supper, which has been prepared, and you said you laid down and took a little nap, and when you got up, Maggie and Paul was gone, or did they leave when you laid down?
I believe that I'm not sure.
But they weren't there when you woke up around the 9 o'clock mark or so when you made the call to Maggie to let her know you were going to
your house. No, nobody was in that house when I left.
So, and just trying to narrow down, the last time that Paul and Maggie is when y'all were eating supper.
Yes, sir.
Welcome. Okay.
Your answer was yes, sir.
Is that correct? That's correct.
That wraps up the third segment of our continuing coverage in the trial of Alec Murdaugh. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss any of our updates as the case continues. I'm Tony Bruschi. You can follow me on Twitter @TonyBPod. Stay with us.